Good morning. It's Monday, April 8th. The war in the Middle East is now 185 days old. I'm Jonathan Schanzer, Senior Vice President for Research at Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Welcome back to the FTD Morning Brief. We've passed the half-year mark in this war. It's been a long journey. Here at the Morning Brief, we've tried to help you, our audience, understand the conflict by digging into the dynamics behind the headlines. As I saw it when we started this thing, there is a real need for that because our media simply doesn't cut it. It's vapid. So if you like what we do, keep tuning in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday here at the FTD Morning Brief. Our guest this morning is John Podhoretz, sometimes known as J-Pod. He's the editor of Commentary Magazine, a truly top-notch publication, where I happen to be a contributing editor. He's a former speechwriter for Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush. He's a film critic. Oh, and his endorsement of my 2008 book, Hamas versus Fatah, snagged some prime real estate right on the front cover. So I guess you could say I've known him for a few years. We'll speak to John momentarily live here on the FTD Morning Brief. Amidst heightened fear of an Iranian response to Israel's targeted killing of a senior IRGC commander last week, we should pause and appreciate the inevitability of this moment. In recent years, as the threat of Iranian proxies grew, the Israelis announced a counter-strategy, the octopus strategy. The concept is simple. Iranian proxies are the tentacles of the octopus. The head of that octopus is in Tehran, and that's where Israel needs to strike to defeat its enemy. Except the Israelis haven't exactly followed through. Sure, we've seen attacks inside Iran. An entire drone fleet was destroyed, attacks on nuclear scientists, cyber strikes on centrifuges and other regime assets. It's been an impressive list. But has Israel deterred Iran? Looking back at the last 6 months, the answer is clearly no. I'm not saying Israel needs to blast away and push the region to all-out war, but the regime in Tehran operates on some basic principles. It takes risks when it's safe to do so, and it backs down when the risks are too high. As the war shifts from the sands of Gaza to a showdown between the Iranian regime and Israel, the Israelis need to inspire fear in the heart of the regime. With the right threats and the right strikes, the regime might reconsider its trajectory, but it must believe there is mortal danger. I get it. The strategy is not without risks, but the alternative, tangling with the tentacles, is what's happening right now. The Israelis are playing defense, and that's not the way to win the war. Now for your headlines. Headline one, the big one from this weekend. Israel is withdrawing an entire division from the Gaza Strip, leaving just one brigade. If you ask Hamas, Israel looks like it just backed down in the face of pressure from President Biden, not to mention the hordes of angry protesters on campus, on Main Street, and around the world. There may be some truth to that, but there are good reasons to do this too. Israel needs to reassess, restock, and rearm. Israeli warfighters need a breather, and that breather should accompany the long-awaited effort to move approximately 1.4 million displaced Gazans out of Rafah, while also allowing for negotiators to make one last push for a hostage deal. If that fails to materialize once the displaced people have been escorted to relative safety, I believe Israel can and should enter Rafah and then take care of business. By my estimation, that could happen as soon as 2 months from now, depending on how quickly the displaced Gazans are moved and how quickly hostage talks either succeed or fail. The clock is now ticking. But don't forget about headline two, and that is that tensions between Hezbollah and Israel remain high after this weekend. Hezbollah downed an Israeli drone, and then Israel's Air Force hammered a strategic target in Baalbek, the heart of Hezbollah country. This fight is far from settled, folks, and Israeli military leaders say the country is still on war footing despite the Gaza drawdown. Hezbollah has fired an estimated 2,800 rockets, missiles, and drones at Israel. Israel has given Hezbollah as good as they gave it. Some 300 Hezbollah fighters are dead. Lots of military infrastructure in Lebanon has been destroyed. But there are still about 100,000 Israelis that cannot return to their homes in the north. So the fighting is not likely to stop, even if things turn quiet in the north. As I've warned from the beginning, this is a regional war with Iran. It's a regional war of Iranian design, which I don't like. It means that the regime has, to some extent, set the rules of this contest, which means that Israel must seize the initiative, even if it's forced to stand down in Gaza for a time. Let me say it plainly. What Israel does with this purported downtime will be critical to the outcome of this wider war. And headline three, Qatar has been exposed yet again as a Hamas sponsor. A friend on the Hill flagged this for me over the weekend. An article that ran in the Huffington Post on Saturday revealed that a Qatari policeman is stationed outside the home of Hamas political leader Musa Abu Marzouk. Inside Abu Marzouk's home, a Qatari official, quote, subjected HuffPost to an extensive search, a step Abu Marzouk's Hamas aides apologized for, seemed embarrassed about, and made sure to say was due to Qatar's requirements. To recap, Qatar is a patron of Hamas. Qatar has been giving the terror group $30 million per month since 2018. It provides a safe haven for Hamas leaders, and it is representing Hamas's interests in the hostage negotiations. This is insane, people. On what planet is a regime like this entitled to be treated like an ally by the United States? And on what planet is a regime like this to be trusted by the Israelis in sensitive negotiations? Yeah, I know I sound like a broken record, but this arrangement needs to end now. Qatar is a state sponsor of terrorism, and it must be treated as such. Okay, I'm now pleased to introduce John Podhoretz, the man behind the magic of Commentary Magazine. He's truly a Renaissance man with his finger on the pulse of American politics, the mess in the Middle East, books, movies, you name it. I've been on his podcast a few times over the last year or so, so I figured it was time to have him on mine. We're thrilled he agreed. So let's talk to him live right now on the FDD Morning Brief. Welcome, John Podhoretz.
This is such a slick podcast. It's so much slicker than mine that I am feeling a little intimidated, frankly.
Well, that was the goal. So I'm glad okay. It's working.
So congratulations to you and FDD for the gleaming look of this excellent podcast and your initial peroration, which was very eloquent and even more depressing than the way I've been feeling since Thursday when Biden and Blinken and everybody collapsed in the face of 7 aid workers being killed and a guy who makes tapas yelling about it.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to have predicted the headlines here, to put it mildly. Well, let me, with that in mind then, let me just ask you, what do you make of this recent announcement that Israel is withdrawing significant numbers of troops from Gaza? Does this sound like the Israel that you know? Does this make any sense to you?
I'm very frightened and concerned because it seems to me there are two possible ways to read this. One is not frightening, which is that there is a larger strategy involved here that the Israelis have been ready to implement when the time came and a hostage deal might be imminent or happening, which is pulling back as part of a precondition, getting the hostages in, starting to develop the means by which a corridor can be created for the Gazans to move north out of Rafah and get out of the way for the invasion of Rafah at some point. The other is that the Israeli war cabinet and the Israeli government, its nerve has been broken, that it's been 6 months. You got to figure these guys have slept 2 hours a night for 6 months. Benjamin Netanyahu developed a hernia last week, which can be something that is developed from extreme stress. Their statements over the last 4 days have been incomprehensible, contradictory. Either they are still as determined as they were and that what they are saying about how, yes, they're still going into Rafah, yes, they're going to destroy Hamas, that all of that is real and tough and that they're showing exactly the resolve that they intend to show. Or it's now turning into braggadocio and it's turning into, you know this better than anybody, but that during the previous conflicts in Gaza, I don't know, number them 4 or 5, with Bibi as the leader, he would often talk in extraordinarily expansive terms about how Hamas was going to be eliminated. This would be the end of Hamas. This war, they were really going to take Hamas down. And obviously, the results of those conflicts were almost exactly the opposite, that Hamas bought time, strengthened itself, built the tunnels, and got itself ready to do the invasion of October 7th. So I have no idea. I don't think anybody has any idea which of these two possibilities is real. Either that they're tough and resolved and just trying to do something tactical in order to get some hostages out, or that what happened last week with America was a straw that broke their back. Everyone keeps saying that the world food kitchen, central kitchen, my mind won't allow me to remember the name of Jose Andres's organization, but that because I can't bear the whole thing, but that broke Biden's, but that was the straw that broke the American camel's back. But the Biden administration's response may have been the straw that broke the Israeli government's back.
I think that's right. And I do wonder, though, and we talked about this last week over the phone and on the commentary podcast. We've been watching that rhetoric from Biden. I don't think that the World Central Kitchen, the WCK.
That's how
I remember it, WCK.
Thank you.
I'm not sure that really was the most significant thing. And yes, it was the straw that broke the camel's back, but we've been watching this rhetoric get more and more tense over the last 2 months, let's say. But clearly the president is appealing to his base. Everybody knows this. But I think the question that I have, and you and I talked about this before, do you think the president's shift against Israel, that rhetoric, that soaring and sometimes ugly rhetoric, is it going to help him or hurt him in November? You watch American politics, you have your finger on the pulse of what's going on here. Do you think it's actually going to give him a boost?
No. I mean, I think even the idea, the question, as we talked about last week, is imagine an electorate of 150 million people nationally. Genuinely, how many people are going to vote on this as a number one or a number two issue on how Israel treated God, the war, the justice or injustice of the war, right? There are 5.5 million Jews in the United States. There are 3 million Muslims. Then there are, 60 million evangelicals. Evangelicals are the game ball here in that sense. Were they going to vote for Biden because he was really good on Israel? I don't think so. Were Jews who are important in two states, Michigan not being one of them, but Pennsylvania and Florida being the states in which Jews, and particularly Pennsylvania, could make a decisive difference, were they going to vote for Israel as the number one issue? Well, maybe. I don't know. I mean, subsection would. So then you have 300, then you have 150 million people. So what's better for the president, that he is seen to have won a war against a terrorist satrapy, or that he somehow got wobbly? Now, maybe he got wobbly because, what Israel's doing is terrible, and so it's good that he got wobbly. But what the record shows is that the Biden administration was, for the first 6 months of the war, critical but supportive, and supportive where it mattered. We are now in a new period. And judging from what John Kirby, the White House spokesman, said yesterday on the morning shows and stuff like that, and Kirby, of course, is the voice that is sent out to speak as favorably as Israel as possible. That's why Karine Jean-Pierre, the press secretary, does not brief on these matters, not only because she's not a foreign policy person, but also because her tone is wrong. Well, Kirby's tone shifted this weekend without question. He said, we do not support a ground invasion in Rafah, period. That was what he said unequivocally on every show. He wanted to get that message out, and said, if Israel doesn't change the way it does things, we're going to change the way we do things. And so Biden has done enough not to receive credit for stopping the war, if he somehow stops the war. And he has not done enough for people who think, boy, it would be really great if America finally participated in a victorious military conflict. So I think he is himself, just like walked himself into a corner in which the best he can hope for is a kind of electoral draw on this matter. And at the worst, it will serve to send the implicit message to people who are not paying that much attention that he's kind of weak. He's silly. He's weak. He can't focus on things. He changes his mind. And I don't know why that's good if he's trying to run for re-election. I'm trying to do this as unideologically and as far away from my own priors as possible, just to look at this.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, the odds on bet was it would be better for him to back Israel if he was going to back Israel and help them win. If he was going to start there, he should end up there. Don't get wobbly. Don't look indecisive. And he has now done something else. And yeah, I think again, like, great. Yeah.
And I have to say, I mean, I've just been thinking about how this is all being viewed by the Iranians, but also by the Russians, by the Chinese, right? When they watch this and they look at what was deemed to be the most vital alliance for the United States in the Middle East, to watch them, you know, watch this administration turn around and essentially just pull the rug out from under the Israelis, you've got to imagine how this starts to look elsewhere.
I want to go back a little bit. You're right. And you know more about that. You know so much more about that than I do, that I don't really have very much to add. I don't know what signals the Israelis need to send except to win the war to deter Iran. Obviously, Iran is also being theoretically deterred in part by the carrier battle group that's off Lebanon. Obviously, it's not being deterred. The Houthis do not appear to be deterred, and whatever Iranian backed group in Iraq that's playing games with firing drones at Eilat, the southernmost city in Israel, they don't seem to be deterred particularly. These are tests of American resolve that we're losing. But I don't. This is a very big question. There is this, you know, story abroad that Iran may directly strike Israel in retaliation for the bombing of this Damascus. I guess they call it an embassy. I don't know. It is an embassy. It isn't. I don't really understand.
We'll call it an annex.
Okay, the annex of the building. And so they might, if that's the case, then that would be the first direct military engagement between Israel and Iran ever. And it seems to me like it's insufficient for Iran to cross that Rubicon because of what happened there, but who knows? And the Israelis are taking the threat seriously. I want to just move back because I found something here, because I think it's important in terms of whether or not we can now say that the Biden administration is talking in bad faith when it talks about the Jose Andres mission. November 30th, 2023, Antony Blinken goes to Tel Aviv and he says, look, the way you're conducting this war is too indiscriminate and you need to do better if you're going to go south and, you know, try to finish up. We discussed the details of Israel's ongoing planning and I underscored the imperative for the United States that the massive loss of civilian life and displacement of the scale that we saw in northern Gaza not be repeated in the south. Israel understands the imperative of protecting civilians and will continue to work to ensure that that carries forward in practice. That's November 30th, 2023. Israel changed its warfighting strategy after that meeting. The drawdown in forces that we heard about this weekend, that started then. There were people started getting pulled out in December and January, and then later in February. Israel has, I think, a fifth of the, you know, until this weekend, a fifth of the number of armed personnel in Gaza that it had at the time that Blinken and Netanyahu, whoever, had this conversation. Israel acceded to America's demands. And it's now April, and seven aid workers get killed in what was clearly, at best, a tragic mistake, and at worst was a Hamas operation designed to draw fire to blow up the trucks. We don't really know yet. And America's like, that's it. No credit being given Israel for the change in strategy. No credit to the fact that it put Israelis in greater danger because of their loss of the overwhelming numerical advantage that they were fighting with at the beginning. And there is no massacre in Rafah. There has been no massacre. There has been no civilian. This whole, so they know this. Blinken is the person who said it. The Israelis, you know, must bring it up every time they have a conversation. Biden just decided that this was looking too bad for him, and he needed to cut bait. So we're operating in bad faith here. We Americans are operating in bad faith here. And I just don't think that's a good look, aside from everything else. Like, it's strategically stupid, because you should, if you're going to back somebody to win a war, you want them to win the war. And we're not doing that.
We're not. Not right now. But as I've been saying from the get-go, this thing's going to have its ups and downs. We're going to have more of those. And hopefully, John, we'll have you back to talk more about hopefully more ups than downs. But in the meantime, I do want to thank you for joining us live today on the FDD Morning Brief. I know you're busy, so thanks for taking the time.
It's a pleasure. It's not a pleasure. This is not a subject about which I take any pleasure in having a conversation. But with you, a conversation is always a pleasure.
Feeling is mutual. Okay, here's what FDD has on tap for you today. FDD's Director of Research, David Adesnik, published a piece in the Wall Street Journal on Friday eviscerating the credibility of the casualty numbers that the Hamas-run Gaza Health Ministry has published during the war. His research shows that journalists and even President Biden himself have regurgitated Hamas-generated casualty numbers that have no grounding in reality. In fact, nearly half of the reported casualties rely on, quote, news reports, unquote, with little or no credibility. This is straight up disinformation, and our media gobbles it up. So does the White House. Yikes. FDD published a research memo by Alan Goldsmith, a longtime friend who worked on Capitol Hill. The memo tackles the urgent need for reform at the United Nations. Former chair of the House Foreign Affairs Middle East Subcommittee, Ileana Ross-Leighton, and FDD senior advisor Rich Goldberg penned a foreword to the report, which just hammers home the dysfunction of the UN and presents a compelling bipartisan case for how Congress and the administration can and should set things right. And finally, over at FDD's Long War Journal, Caleb Weiss has a new piece examining a worrying new trend he's seeing in Africa, where the Islamic State has made a concerted effort to proselytize. Caleb shows examples of this in both Mali and Mozambique. He warns that this is an integral part of the jihadi state-building project and will continue to track this trend. That's another episode down here at the FDD Morning Brief. Read our expert analysis on our website, fdd.org. Read our quick takes on X at FDD and support our work with a tax-deductible donation at fdd.org/invest. Tune in Wednesday for another episode of the FDD Morning Brief. We'll have Rebecca Heinrichs on the program. She's going to geek out about missile defense. Man, I love that. It's going to be a treat, I promise. Until then, I'm Jonathan Shanzer, signing off for FDD. Thank you.